It's time to stay human. My name is Michael Goldberg. I'm a volunteer here at Northern Community Radio, and I put together this radio show every week to help keep my spirits lifted and to give myself a little courage. I hope it might do some of that for you. I like this quote from the writings of Anais Nin. Life shrinks or expands in proportion to one's courage. Stay tuned.
There's Martians on the ceiling. There's a cape buffalo on the patio. And you ask me how I'm feeling. There's a sniper by the swing set. The highway has been mined. And here you come with a great big smile, singing rise and shine. Well, there's nothing you can say that will get me up today. Nothing you have ever said that can drive me from this bed. You can call me lazy, crazy, call me stupid, I don't care. I ain't getting up. Well, it's dangerous out there. There's a hunter from New Jersey in my kitchen drinking beer. There's a Texan out my window with a chainsaw and a lead. I could take a walk around the block to shake me from this slumber. But there are student drivers out today, and one has got my number. Well, there's nothing you can say that will get me up today. Nothing you have ever said that can drive me from this bed. You can call me lazy, crazy, call me stupid, I don't care. I ain't getting up. Well, it's dangerous out there. It's enough to make me scream. Why, it's two Girl Scouts, one Jehovah's Witness, and a whole SWAT team. So listen to me, darling. Please heed these words I say. It's too scary here in February, dear. Set my snooze alarm for May. Well, there's nothing you can say that will get me up today. Nothing you have ever said. You can drive me from this bed. You can call me lazy, crazy, call me stupid, I don't care. I ain't getting up. Well, it's dangerous out there.
Crazy old neighbor and he has been.
Chivalry with Goodnight Moon. Bill Morrissey before that. That song by Chivalry is on the soundtrack to Pulp Fiction. I was thinking the other day about the Samuel L. Jackson character in that, Jules, who believes he's guided by the hand of God. He quotes the prophet Ezekiel from the Bible. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the iniquities of the selfish and the tyranny of the evil men. Jules is a hired killer, a hitman, more ruthless even than his gangster boss, and he counts himself among the righteous. Predators often do. Tarantino's movies are extravaganzas of people preying on other people, but the moral logic of violence, of hunting people, treating them as commodities, it's the same in real life. That's why we never tire of stories of revenge. Today on Stay Human, some thoughts about encounters with wolves and other predators, including the men in power whose violations of women's bodies and dignity are so much in the news right now. I can't pretend to understand what's happening. I mean, how can it be that Senator Franken's actions are a threat to public safety or to equality? Why does he have to go? I don't know. But it does seem to me that Me Too is of a piece with Black Lives Matter, that they're both about the same thing, the privilege to use and abuse other people, the rules that say who has to pay and who gets their way. Could be that's changing as people step up to defend themselves.
Yeah, D5, the big bad wolf, the big bad wolf, yeah. Come on, the big bad wolf. D5, yeah. Long ago there were three little pigs, little hats and piggy wigs, for the big bad wolf, the very bad big bad wolf. They didn't give three figs. Number one, man, he liked to play, so we built this house of hate with a hate toot toot, and he blew on his flute, and he played around all day. Now let's ride.
Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? Bad wolf, the big bad wolf. Who's afraid of the big bad wolf?
We ain't afraid, y'all. We ain't afraid, huh?
Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? The big bad wolf, the big bad wolf. Who's afraid of the big bad wolf?
We ain't afraid, y'all. We ain't afraid. Huh? Number two, he was fond of jigs, and so we built this house with twigs. Hey, diddle diddle, he played on his fiddle and he danced with lady pigs. Huh? Number three said nicks on tricks. I'ma build my house with bricks. He had no chance to sing and dance, cause work and play don't mix. Now let's go, come on.
Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? The big bad wolf, the big bad wolf. Who's afraid of the big bad wolf?
We ain't afraid, y'all. We ain't afraid,
Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? The big bad wolf.
My friends who hunt know a thing or two about predators, and because they spend so much time in the woods, it's not that rare that they come across the most impressive predator in the North Woods. Here's a story from Aaron Wenger.
Years ago, probably around 73 or 74, I got to see a wolf hunt. It was winter, damn cold one too, and me and my best friend Trueblood had decided to go ice fishing down on Northwest Bay. Didn't use snowmobiles back then, skied or snowshoed down, pulling a sled with our gear. Didn't have power augers then, so we ice chiseled a hole through a couple of feet of ice, got ready to fish. No fish finders, no video, so you kind of cut this 1 6- or 7-inch hole in the whole expanse of the bay and believed, really believed, that there were fish at the bottom of it. Took faith. That day our faith was rewarded. Within an hour we'd caught 2 6-7-pound northerns, good eating fish. One of them got off the hook as I was raising it through the hole. Couldn't turn around in the hole, though, and was slowly sliding down backwards. Gonna lose the fish. Trueblood ripped off coat, stuck his arm up to his neck down the hole, and grabbed the northern, teeth and all. Half of him wet, 10 below temperature, nice pick puncture in hand from the northern, bleeding like a stuck hog. Had enough. Had enough fish for a few meals, had enough cold, enough wet, and by geez, ready to head home. Might make it back by dark. Started putting gear back together for the hike back. Some years before, I had met this Anishinaabe man, Garnet, while I was a dumb hunter trying to get a deer down by the Big Ridge country. He was running his beaver trap line, him and his partner. Me and my partner, wife, were camped on the third day of a fourth-day hunt. Hadn't seen a deer. Didn't know how to yet. Were discouraged. Garner's canoe came past the point of our camp. We looked each other over. Asked him if he'd like tea. He came in. Carol made tea, served some homemade cookies. We talked. Well, at least Garnet and us talked. His partner spoke no English. It was our introduction to our Anishinaabe neighbors of Northwest Bay. And by the time we had built our log house up along Stamp Creek, we were friends. Garnet continued to use his trap line. It happened to span the land where we built. Big deal. We talked hunting, fishing, wild rice, lots of things. Carol and I were learning from a man who knew these things like I knew physics. It was a good deal. Anyhow, this evening of the northern fishing, Garnet came across the bay looking to run his beaver sets back on a series of ponds west of our log house. Usually he ran these in midday, had got a late start. Coming across the frozen bay on his ski-doo, old kind, big yellow kind of bulging hood, maybe go 20 miles an hour on a good day, downhill with a tailwind, Garnet always had a .22 carbine strapped across the hood for trapping. Wolves had bounty on their heads, $100, sell hide for another $100, good money for a trapper. Trueblood and me, we heard him coming 4 or 5 miles away. Pretty soon saw the yellow machine skimming along. Gotta understand, those old snow machines broke down about every hour. Plugs fouled, gas line plugged or iced, maybe even piston blown. So if you ran a machine, you did it with a couple buddies to get you back, or you always had a set of tools so you could fix most simple things when the machine broke down. They're not reliable, and they were not fast. Garnet got up to us, drove over, shut down, and we began to talk. Usual stuff. How's fishing? How was hunting this year? Any moose around? Cold enough for you? Usual stuff. As we're talking, I look across the bay and back of Garnet, see the whole pack, maybe 10, 12 wolves, come out of the woods, head out across the ice. It's maybe a mile from us to the wolf pack. They're headed out across the bay to next point, looking for deer to run this night. I said nothing to Garnet, knew he'd want to get one. Damn him, he must have read my mind, saw my eyes flicking away, whatever. He turned, saw the pack, yanked that yellow machine back into life, started across the intercepting, saw him fumbling with tied down rifle as he gunned the machine along. He made it maybe a third of the way across before the wolves spotted him. Whole pack took off at chase speed for the point they had been aiming at. Garnet running fast as possible on a collision course. He's going to get him, I said to Trueblood. We both wished the pack luck. Luck wasn't the deal. Courage was the deal. All at once, one wolf, black, fast, and big, split off from the pack and turned away from the escape, turned to intercept Garnet. Dead straight course right down the pipe towards the man coming over to shoot a couple. Heard the ski-doo drop down in RPMs for a few seconds. Wolf speeding up. Wolf not really running anymore, more like flying above the snow. Heard those RPMs come back out, up, peeking out. Garnet starting to turn away from the flying wolf. Wolf close now. RPMs up more. Gonna blow that machine, I thought. Garnet got the machine headed back our way, engine screaming, wolf gaining. Wolf chasing that thing like a dog chases a car. Man, I was torn. Friend being chased down, but wolves had escaped. Did all I could think of doing. Howled. Figured it couldn't hurt. Might distract wolf. Only a couple hundred yards away now. Don't know if the howl had anything to do with it, but the wolf veered off. Ran to the same point as the pack had gone. Everyone lived. Garnet came to a sliding stop right in front of us, looked over his shoulder. Damn, he said, I could have had him if I could have got the safety off.
Aaron Wenger is a frequent contributor to Stay Human with stories from his life in the woods and his life of the mind.
Shining stone, ain't nothing in this life for free. Running from the greatest evil, finally dawned on me. A man's gotta fight temptation. Keep the wolves from the door. I hear them scratching like I don't know better. Won't you keep the wolves from the door? It won't be long before. I don't want.
drag me down, waiting to pull me under. I've shaken off my chains, but I still feel those shackles living inside of me. I know I gotta fight temptation. Keep the wolves from the door. I hear them scratching like I don't know better. Won't you keep the wolves from the door? It won't be long before I cave in and open up. It's a fine line walking when they scratching at my door. A head full of voices screaming out for more. I can see the shining of his blade, and I can see the shining of his blade. It's a slow road to nowhere, walking with the day. It's hard to keep on moving with you hanging round my neck. And I can see the shining of his blade, and I can see the shining of his blade. Keep the wolves from the door. Scratching like I don't know better. Won't you keep the wolves from the door? It won't be long before I cave in and open other. Keep the wolves from the door. I hear them scratching like I don't know better. Won't you keep the wolves from the door? It won't be long before I cave in and open up the door.
That's Rag and Bone Man on Stay Human. On today's show, Wolves and Other Predators. Our program receives support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. My friend and neighbor Matthew Miltich has this story about what you might find in the woods.
It's October. My son Sam and I, after a mile's walk in from the road, stand under tall red pines on a bluff overlooking a small, very deep lake in far northern Itasca County. We're hunting ruffed grouse this morning, but we've stopped beneath the pines to rest. This bluff point overlooking the lake is part of a 40-acre parcel logged over by a paper company some 10 years ago, before Sam's wife, Katie, bought the land from the company. These big pines are survivors of the logging, but most of the property, which glaciers thousands of years ago pushed up into hills here and hollowed out to valleys there, today grows mostly young birch and aspen and balsam fir. The lake reflects the season's colors, the blue-green of white pines and red of maples, yellow of birches, old gold of tamaracks. This vision enchants us, but we break away from it finally to go on hunting. My good little Welsh Springer Spaniel, Cosmo, even more dedicated to the pursuit of upland birds than I, leads the way, but as we tramp uphill on the trail leading to the north boundary of Sam and Katie's land, we're confronted by a troop of hunters, a half dozen, coming downhill toward us. The alpha male, I'll call him, a man in his early 30s, I'm guessing, leads the others. He carries a 12-gauge semi-automatic shotgun by its muzzle, one-handed, the gun pointed forward, its barrel balanced teeter-totter on his shoulder, so the muzzle points forward, aimed right at us as he approaches. Should the gun fire by accident, it might kill my son or me. Should the man trip carrying a shotgun so, and if the gun should flip, as likely it would if he did, its discharge into his stomach could literally cut him in two. "Hi," I say. "Hey, your gun is pointed right at us." "Yeah," he says. He stops, takes the gun off his shoulder and rests rests its butt end on the earth next to his foot. He holds it by the tip of its barrel, his thumb over the muzzle. I see a GoPro camera mounted over the gun's rib. "What are you guys up to?" he asks. "This is my place," Sam says. "My land." "Yeah? We hunt around here every year. Not many birds this year. We've only killed about 30 so far. Usually by now we've killed about 100. I myself have hunted partridge, as we used to call them, during most of 7 decades, first tagging along behind my father as he hunted when I was little, and then going out on my own or with a pal from when I was about 12 years old. I know by this guy's words he's either the worst liar or the worst game hog I've ever heard speak. Probably he's both. "Do you enjoy having a right thumb?" I ask him. He looks at me as if I'm crazy. "What? your thumb. If you value your thumb, you'd best take it off the muzzle of your gun there, I tell him. He stares at me, but keeps his thumb like a cap atop the muzzle of his loaded shotgun. I was a Marine sergeant in Vietnam, I say. I know what I'm talking about. Sam says, listen, we're hunting here this morning, and this is my land. We'd like to have it to ourselves today. The other hunters look at each other and sort of moil around a bit, but they accept Sam's right to his own place, and finally they head back up the hill, unspeaking, following the leader. When they're out of sight, Sam says, Katie and I have never thought about posting this place, but now I'm convinced we've got to do it. A year later, October again, having acted on this resolve, he gets a call from a woman who owns a cabin on Lakeshore near his posted land. Sam's signs say no trespassing, she understands, but might she and her husband and their dog, she asks, have his permission to walk Sam and Katie's trails for grouse? Sam tells her yes, they can hunt on his place, but please, as she's requested, on foot and not with an ATV. She calls again a day or two later, tells him thank you, but also that someone has taken down the no trespassing sign from the trail just at the south boundary of the place, and with her phone she sends Sam a picture showing the empty post from which his poster has been removed. A few days after this call, my son and I walk his 40 acres once again, hunting. We find, as reported, Sam's sign has been stolen. The trail through the hills is slick with muddy ATV tracks. This is an unhappy circumstance, but we take a breather under the big pines on the bluff over the lake. Autumn colors, blue water, bracing cool air, the wildness of the place are restorative. But after a time, we tramp back toward the county road, and soon we hear an ATV coming toward us. In just a moment, a man of middle age on an ATV appears over a rise in the trail. He rides his machine straight towards us. I hold up my hand, palm outward. He stops just shy of our feet. He's heavy set, dressed in hunting clothes, wearing an orange cap and vest. A gun rides in a scabbard attached to his machine. You're on private land, I tell him. He squints at me. Whose land? It's mine, Sam says. It's posted, but somebody took down my sign back there. He points in the direction from which the rider has come. I didn't see any sign. Somebody took it down. You just passed the steel post it was wired to. Since when do you own this land? The guy demands. Since 10 years ago, Sam says. My wife and I own it. We pay on it, and we pay the taxes, too. The rider shuts down his machine. The quiet of the woods returns. Prove it, the man says. Sam shows him his driver's license and then shows him a picture of his no trespassing signs taken on his iPhone. The man snorts, unimpressed. He sort of reclines on the length of his four-wheeler, takes out an e-cigarette, and begins to smoke. You can look in the county plat book, Sam says. This is my land. I'm going to my deer stand, the guy says. Okay? If you want to walk across my place, it's okay, but I don't want a machine in here. Why not? Look what machines have done to this trail. Sam indicates the muddy ruts machines have made. If you want to hunt grouse on foot, okay, but no machines and no taking big game on my property. The man snorts derisively. You can walk, can't you? If you want to walk to your stand, I'm okay with that. How are you going to enforce no trespassing? I go through here all the time. With trail cams, Sam says. For another 10 minutes, the guy in the ATV smirks and smokes, continues to question Sam's ownership or right to control this 40 acres. Finally, I say, listen, we've had enough. We want to get on with our day. I'm asking you to leave right now. Who the hell are you? I show him my Veterans Administration ID card with the Marine Corps symbol of eagle, globe, and anchor. I'll confess right now, I sometimes trade on my Marine Corps service, but I feel a little bit entitled, you know. I'm his father. I gesture towards Sam. But my patience is exhausted now, and I feel adrenaline, or whatever it is, preparing my body for physical confrontation. But I know better. The guy is still stretched out on his machine as if he were lounging on a divan, smoking. I'm not leaving, he says. Sam knows better, too. He takes a picture of the number on the ATV. Then he says, if you don't leave right now, I'm calling the sheriff. This prompts no response from the smoker. Sam starts a call on his phone, and now the man suddenly sits up and starts his machine. He departs, finally. But Sam and I both feel uneasy. On our hike back to the county road and my pickup, I feel the same tension and vigilance when on patrol, wary of possible ambush. Despite our call to the Itasca County Sheriff's Office and a visit with deputies, nothing feels resolved. The next morning, out for grouse once again on public land now, we find wolf scat on a trail we're hunting in southern Couchiching County. My good little bird dog going on 10 years old would be no match at all for a wolf, and we've read recent reports of wolves attacking hunting dogs. If a wolf comes after Cosmo, I say, don't hesitate to shoot. I don't say shoot the wolf, which would be legal only in defense of human life, but Cosmo hunts close and so is probably not at great risk, but we're in wolf country, no doubt about that. In the afternoon, we're back in Itasca County. We follow a fine trail on public land into grouse country, probably as good as exists anywhere in the world. A half mile or more into that woods, Sam says to me, look! 70 yards ahead of us, a big adult wolf crosses the trail. It seems suddenly to appear without showing the least alarm, and then to disappear. I feel a sudden sharp rise in my awareness, already pretty high, as I've been in hunting mode. We continue on, and after perhaps another half mile of hiking, a second wolf steps into the open ahead of us. It seems as tall at the shoulder as a yearling white-tailed deer, tawny and full-coated, its tail straight out behind it so it seems 7 feet long. And it pauses there in mid-trail to look us over, and then, as casual as a human neighbor giving us the once-over and done, turns away and saunters into the brush. The country all about us, seeming wild enough before, seems suddenly wilder yet. Just at evening, when our hunting day is done and we're on our way home, we encounter a third wolf. This one is dark gray, and like the others, shows no alarm, and perhaps the three are from a single pack, relatives to one another, and in our hunting today, we walked right into theirs. Sam and I talk in the pickup on the road home as the sky turns red and daylight departs. Of the day's encounters, we agree the one with the human was fraught with dread and discomfort, and those with the wolves were thrilling, if eerie. And we as hunters, Sam and I, even this late in human development, even at this point in our super technology-charged civilization, understand that hunting itself is territorial, based in the violent killing of prey, and has the potential always to lead to conflict between hunters. Sam and I, at least, feel we have a better chance to cooperate with and live in relative peace with the wolves than with people like the man on the ATV.
Thanks to Matthew Miltich for that, and to Aaron Wenger for his story, Garrett and the Wolf.
There's a jungle out there, disorder and confusion everywhere. No one seems to care. Well, I do, hey, who's in charge here? There's a jungle out there, poison in the very air we breathe. You know what's in the water that you drink? Well, I do, and it's amazing. People think I'm crazy, cause I worry all the time. If you paid attention, you'd be worried too. You better pay attention, or this world you love so much might just kill you. I could be wrong now, but I don't think so. Cause there's a jungle out there. There's a jungle out there. There's a jungle out there. Violence and danger everywhere. It's brother against brother, pounding on each other like they were millionaires. There's a jungle out there. There's a jungle in here too. Gotta tap right on your phone, a microphone, a camera, checking out everything you do. Called paranoia, as the saying goes, even paranoids have been me. I'm not the one who's crazy, I'm not afraid of them. They're afraid of you and me. I could be wrong there, but I don't think so. Cause there's a jungle out there. there's a jungle out there. I'm only kidding with you. Is this a jungle out there? Is a jungle out there?
When I moved to New York City from the woods of northern Minnesota, it took me a while to figure out how to navigate the streets. Amazing what you can get used to. How to stand, where to look and not look, what to do when you see a barefoot man angrily talking to himself walking up the street with a brick in his hand. I had to learn how to get around. After a while, I realized that if I was nervous about who was on the street, what was going on, it drew the attention of anyone who was watching for a mark, somebody to hit up for spare change or sell drugs, get into some kind of unwanted encounter with. If I showed fear, I was inviting danger. That's what they say to do if you meet up with a predator, show no fear, which you really can't fake unless you also fake yourself out, its posture, heart rate, pace and humor. You know a predator when you see one. Driving on a country road one time, I slowed for whatever that was up ahead on the shoulder, a mountain lion crossing the road. It was a straightaway, and I had plenty of time, was probably 30 feet away once I had slowed to a roll, and it was in the middle of the road then. She had plenty of time too, apparently. Stopped right in the middle and looked at me, made eye contact through the windshield. And I was kind of glad for that windshield between us. This was an animal that had no fear and owned the ground that she walked on. Human predators sometimes are not as easy to recognize, and some of them are very good at hiding. It's estimated by psychologists that out of every 100 adult males, one or two are clinically psychopathic, people with effectively no conscience. They tend to be charming and manipulative because they see the world as theirs for the taking. They lack remorse, guilt, or empathy. They're narcissistic and grandiose. Most of them are not criminals. A psychopath is more likely to be the president of the bank than to rob it. In fact, when they ranked the percentage of psychopaths found by job, the number one ranking was chief executive officer, then lawyers and politicians, then broadcasters and media personalities. Hey, don't look at me just because I'm on the radio. At a public radio conference some 30 years back, I attended a workshop for managers on strategic planning. It was conducted by a strategist who had worked in the Defense Department for Caspar Weinberger, President Reagan's bellicose Secretary of Defense. And this guy said something that I've never forgotten. He said, "All of you are operating in a hostile environment, and if you can't recognize that, you can't be successful." This was news to me, actually, as the manager of our struggling rural community access radio station. But in thinking it over, I realized that there is a continuity, a consistency between purpose and ideology, between what you're trying for and what you believe in, between customs and practices and the systems that enforce them. Because whether you work for the Secretary of Defense or for a public employees union, whether you're out to conquer the world or just trying to heal it, we're all operating within systems that really reward domination and predation. It gives us a choice, I guess, to act accordingly or what? to be free, to think for ourselves, to resist and contain the predators among us. It would take a lot of courage to live without fear. The Greek roots of the word psychopath translate to mean suffering soul. However your soul is, you're working in a racist, sexist, capitalist society that rewards domination and manipulation of other people, rewards using people to get what you want. What we've got isn't a competitive environment. What we've got is a sick system. This saying from the Talmud is up on the wall of our house. My wife put it there so we could see it every day. Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now. Love mercy now. Work humbly now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it.
Say the blacker the better, the sweeter the juice. I say the darker the flesh and the deeper the roots. I give a holler to my sister's own welfare. Two pockets, if don't nobody else care. And I know they like to beat you down a lot. When you come around the block, brothers clown a lot. But please don't cry, dry your eyes, never let up. Forgive but don't forget, girl, keep your head up. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't believe him. And if you can't learn to love you, you should leave. Cause sister, you don't need me. And I ain't trying to gas you up, I just call them how I see. You know what makes me unhappy? That when brothers make babies and leave a young mother to be a hat. And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and our game from a woman, I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women. Do we hate our women? I think it's time to kill for our women, time to heal our women, be real to our women. And if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that will hate the ladies that make the babies. And since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when and where to create one. So will the real men get up? I know you're fed up, ladies, but keep your head up. Cause if it did
Sometimes I comb my hair and sometimes I won't. Depending on how the wind blows, I might even hang my toes. It really just depends on whatever feels good in my soul.
India Arie with her song Video. Tupac before that on Stay Human, heard this time every week at KAXE, KBXE, and KAXE.org. My name is Michael Goldberg. When criminal charges were brought against Bill Cosby at the end of 2015, and when Roger Ailes was forced out as head of Fox News in the summer of 2016, nobody could have seen what was coming, could have predicted what has happened since the beginning of October, when some of Harvey Weinstein's victims first went public. In the few weeks since then, dozens of prominent, powerful men have been brought down for sexual harassment, including this week Congressman John Conyers and Senator Al Franken. I turned to my friend Carla Shellberg to help me try to make sense out of it. Through her independent law practice in Minneapolis and through her citizen activism, she's fought her whole life for justice and equality, including women's rights. She started calling publicly for Franken to resign soon after the first charge against him surfaced, and a lot of her friends and allies, especially feminists like her who came of age in the 1960s, strongly disagreed with her point of view.
The amount of people who are mad at me right now is really kind of astonishing. They're saying things like, well, her complaining about Al disrespects real victims of sexual abuse. that you're not really a victim thing, you weren't really violated, that's one of the aspects of the damage that is done to women in the society with regard to sexual abuse. Also, it's been amazing to me the generational difference. The reason I still keep talking is because I got all these young women who are messaging me and calling me saying, I can't believe this. I thought you guys said, seriously, I thought you guys said we didn't have to deal with this anymore.
That's Carla Shellberg. I asked her to lay out for me her moral reasoning, how actions as different as clowning around, patting someone's butt, making a pass, can be in the same category as workplace harassment or sexual assault.
Let's just look at Roy Moore, for example. What he did is probably criminal, at least on two or three occasions. And so the question is, you know, is that a criminal activity? Yes. Should he be prosecuted? Well, it depends on whether the statute of limitations has run. But then you go down the line and you say, okay, well, should he be senator? No. So then let's look at Al Franken. So Al Franken is accused of a number of things. The first one with the picture is kind of textbook sexual harassment. If you take the facts that were given to us by her, he stuck his tongue down her throat. She objected. He then set up this picture of where he's either really fondling her breasts or just pretending to fondle her breasts while she's asleep. She didn't know about it until she saw it in the CD of pictures. So an act, I think we can all kind of assume that's an act to humiliate her. He's in a position of power in the field that they work. So you have advances, retaliation, unequal power. Okay, you put it on our grid. Is that criminal? Nope. Nobody should be going to jail. Is that a civil violation where somebody should be sued personally? Possibly. Normally that's in the situation of a employment situation. It probably doesn't fit it. So no, Al Franken should not necessarily be sued. Then you go down one further. Should he be senator? And we get to make the same conclusion about that we did for Roy Moore. It doesn't mean we're not saying that what Roy Moore did was worse than what Al Franken did. We are just saying that as a citizen of the state of Minnesota, I do not want someone that committed sexual harassment and later fondling to be my senator. You know, I'm not ruining the man's life. I'm taking a privilege away. The same thing for Louis C.K. I love this one because I love Louis C.K., okay? I have always loved Louis C.K. I still love Louis C.K. But you know what? I don't get to keep him. Because what Louis C.K. did, let's go through the analysis again. Is it criminal? No, he shouldn't be going to jail. Is it sexual harassment? May or may not be, depending on whether there is a position of power. Is it demeaning towards women? Yes, check. Ding, ding, ding. And we get to say we do not want to honor his privileged position as an entertainer because he has done something that is disrespectful and degrading to women. We're intelligent enough to make those distinctions and still say, I want to draw the line here. Not okay with me. Not okay with me. Because that continues to communicate to our girls, to my girls, that they are not equal. That their body is not theirs. That they do not have sole authority over who touches them. You know, it's been illegal for a long time to ask for sexual favors, and then when you say no, to fire the person, but it still happened. It appears that we are at a moment where there are real consequences for the disrespect towards women, for rape, for sexual harassment, for fondling. Maybe we'll even get to the point where, you know, sexism, just general sexism, will go out of fashion, of how you get ignored in a meeting, or all the other little disgraces that women suffer every day. But we have a real moment here. I don't know what happened in the universe that it allowed this to kind of roll like this, but it happened, and we need to take advantage of it, and we can't turn our back on it. And if we turn our back on it, then we're going to have to answer to our children.
Thanks to Carla Shellberg for sharing that. Thanks also to Aaron Wanger and to Matthew Miltich for their contributions to today's program. Thanks for tuning in and for staying human. Here's Annie DeFranco to take us out.
I was done at 16, showing up for class. I was out there in the rain, learning how to kick some ass. I was done at 16, using my mama's key. It was all on me. It was all on me. You can't tell me. You can't. My right to choose.